Radio, WTC. What are we on? Episode 27? Is that where we're at now? Episode 27 is on the air. On the air and in your ear. This one will be known as So You Say You Want a Revolution. And we'll get to the title of that, explain it a little bit more down the road. But first off, in honor of that, let me introduce the co-hosts of this show, along with myself. Actually, truly the hosts. I'm the co-host. I'm going to first off introduce the quiet one, our George Harrison. Brett, how are you?
Well, actually, you know, I love being George Harrison because he was uber talented, and that's the way I feel about myself. So I am totally happy with George Harrison.
Yeah, quiet and modest. Also, we have the smart one, Keith. How are you doing, Keith?
I'm excellent. Which one was the smart Beatle?
John Lennon. You're the John Lennon
so
of our group.
We are so good.
Brett, too soon.
Too soon. Of course, that gives us our Ringo over there, which would
be goddamn, I hate you.
Well, he's the funny one.
Could have been Pete Best.
He manages to be both Pete Best
I'd
and
rather
Ringo.
Be Tom Pete Best. Thomas the Train Man?
Oh, well, that makes me, of course, Mo. I'm Paul because I'm the cute one. And as we say this one is known as the episode WTC, We Talk Comics, episode 27. And so you say you want a revolution because this episode, I mean, right now we're good to go. My porn is downloaded. My laundry has started. The dog is chewing on a bone. Keith's mom's likely doing the same, and we're going to talk a little bit in the future here about some of the revolutions and some of the new technology coming about in comic books. I'll be among the subjects of this week, along with our regular We Views or Reviews, because I don't want to confuse you folks when I say We Views, because we talk comics. See what we did there? See what we did? We're clever. And, of course, we're going to open up with our regular weekly segment, because our friend Keith is known as @CubReporterK on Twitter. He's one of the most entertaining person on Twitter and all of the Twitterverse. So you should get on there with him. But this is the weekly news with @CubReporterK.
Well, coming out of WonderCon, we have a lot of announcements and a lot of interesting back and forths from some creators. I'll start with some of the announcements. IDW will be publishing a ongoing Rocketeer comic. Written by Mark Waid, art by Chris Samnee, who's done quite a bit of work at Marvel, doing Thor and a few other books like that. I'm not familiar with his work, but really cool to see a ongoing Rocketeer. Later on in the show, we'll be looking at Rocketeer Adventures 2, number 1, which came out this week.
I can tell you, I am familiar with his work, and he's going to blow your mind. He's remarkable.
Very cool. Marvel has announced a couple of new titles that will be coming out of AVX later on this year or related to some of the events there. One of them, Greg Pak, will have a new series, which is getting a bit of an attitude for the title, the choice, Extreme X-Men.
Wonderful.
It will feature Dazzler, an alternate world version of Wolverine and Emma Frost. So we're not really sure what we're going to get from this book, but we'll see how this plays into the expanding X-Men universe. And we are getting a Captain Marvel comic book, but it is not Captain Marvel. It is Carol Danvers. The former Miss Marvel will be getting a field promotion to Captain Marvel as of sometime this summer, written by Kelly DeConnick with art by Dexter Soy.
I got no problems with that. I'd rather that than a Captain Marvel. Tell me he's not coming back now.
Yeah, you're getting that too.
Shit.
We'll see Marvel back in the pages of Secret Avengers during AVX.
Well, those people who read it will be.
That's been coming if you've read the Miss Marvel book since Civil War, really. They've been leading up to it. I've been wondering why it's been taking so long.
You're saying leading up to Captain Marvel coming back or to her being promoted to Captain?
To her being Captain Marvel.
Okay.
that she's been trying to take a place in the Marvel Universe officially.
Yeah, somebody, I could tell that Bendis had a love for that character early on, so.
And there's a good argument that the writer put forward just saying that she was called Miss Marvel at the time she was created, you know, for a specific reason. There had been a Captain Marvel at the time. It was during that wave of Marvel characters where you had She-Hulk and, you know, other female versions of Marvel key characters. Spider-Woman, She-Hulk were introduced around the same time. And the Miss Marvel tag just seemed a bit dated. Was a lot of the reason of making her Captain Marvel now.
And I 100% agree with that.
But she's had so many, many names that all rocked, right?
Like Warbird. Oh, that blows.
Or Binary.
Binary.
Oh, my God. All right, Keith, what's the next news item?
Brian Wood, after he finishes his Wolverine Alpha and Omega miniseries, will be taking over two X-Men books as the regular writer. And in a strange move, they are two X-Men books that cannot overlap. He will be taking over as the writer of Ultimate Comics X-Men and also the adjectiveless X-Men, which is Cyclops' security team, which ties into the Uncanny X-Men book. So he takes those over in June. And we've got some other interesting things coming up. Len Wein, talking about before Watchmen. Len, who is the editor on the original Watchmen, you may recall. So he's one of the members of the Before Watchmen team that were on the original behind-the-scenes group that did Watchmen back in the 80s. Len seems to have had it up to here with Alan Moore. and said at WonderCon, if I had felt about Swamp Thing the way that Alan apparently does about Watchmen, Alan would never have even had a career in the States.
Well, I'm pretty sure he still would have had a career in the States. I'm pretty sure he was talented enough and did enough good work that we still would have heard from him.
A lot of...
I understand his points, though.
I think he's being a bit tongue-in-cheek, but, I mean, certainly he is pointing out something that many... you know, defenders of Before Watchmen and critics of Alan Moore's rants have said, which is, you know, Alan Moore keeps saying, oh, you're just building on the things that I created. Well, you didn't create Swamp Thing. You built from something someone else had created, and yes, you made it better, but you still didn't start from nothing. And Watchmen didn't start from nothing either. You were building on the...
Look, I've read... Who was the one who said they hadn't read Swamp Thing?
I haven't.
That was Keith.
Yeah. Yeah, so let me tell you something. As I have... Okay, as I have, I can tell you, he pretty goddamn close started from nothing.
But
really, really close. Because not only did he reinvent it, there was nothing of overall tremendous quality to start with. So he didn't have to, he had to start for something that was below average quality, and he really did reinvent it to the way that it practically was starting from nothing. And that is the difference here. You have to understand Alan Moore's point, like him or not. His point is, hey, this is already at an extremely high level. You have to match that or go beyond it. Good luck. You're probably not going to. And it doesn't need, it wasn't created to be ongoing. Swamp Thing was created to be ongoing. It's not a self-contained story. And it wasn't a high enough quality that anybody minded somebody else was screwing with it, or in this case, as you say, improving upon it. Agree or disagree, and that is his point of view, and I respect that point of view, even if I don't always respect the way that he goes about saying it.
Anyone else on this topic?
Man-Thing rocks.
What's that? Man-Thing rocks?
Yeah.
Well, the
that's all I really have to say about Swamp Thing is Man-Thing's much better.
Well, I wouldn't say that, but the Demetrius Man-Thing I think probably is better, actually, maybe. I love that.
That's a good run. We should just stop talking about that for a while. I wanted to get that into the cycle somewhere.
We really need to. We really will.
And one last news topic to wrap this up and then bridge into our topic for the week. There will be a Nova story that will be a digital exclusive that will come with the AVX issues. So AVX will include a digital code that gets you the free digital copy when you buy the print. And when you get the digital copy, you also get this exclusive digital-only Nova story that will be written by Mark Waid.
As long as it's not written by Geoff Johns.
I was more hoping that it's not written by Keith Giffen. I mean, that Annihilation stuff is horrible.
All right, well, that does, as you say, Keith, bridges into this week's topic. Now, this is something that you kind of, you proposed the topic. So why don't you open up talking about it, and we'll just go from there.
Mark Waid caused quite a kerfuffle at WonderCon last weekend by really pushing his digital comics plan. He wants to self-publish. He wants digital first, digital only comics. He really wants to reinvent the way that comics are done digitally and wants to be more than just bringing scans of the print page to your tablet or laptop or desktop. And he's going all out. He is announced that he will be selling his private comic collection to fund his dreams. So this caused some concern, and certainly the Twitterverse reacted, as it often does, that this is an attack on the so-called bricks and mortar stores, physical comics, the local comic shops, the comic market, the et cetera. And one or two stores have even gone so far as to say that they won't be carrying Mark Waid's Daredevil anymore, because if he doesn't like print comics, they don't want his print comics either. Now, this is, this reminds us of the backlash that we had just a few months ago when Marvel announced that they were doing free digital copies, insert codes in Avenging Spider-Man number one. And the stores said, well, you're capturing information on our customers when they log in to get this code. So you're grabbing our customer information and trying to steal our customers and we're paying you for it, essentially. So, there's some interesting backlash that's happening from the print medium stores.
Anybody have anything to say on this? I know I certainly do. Brett, you must have something to say.
Well, I always just find it constantly amazing that the comic book stores are constantly ready to jump out and claim that the sky is falling because of one little piece, because an acorn hit them on the head or something like that. It's just like, what do you mean stop carrying Daredevil because Mark Waid wants to release a free comic book? Who cares? So a fan can get a free comic book from Mark Waid. I mean, until Marvel decides that they're going to release Daredevil for free digitally, then, I doubt that's going to happen anytime soon, then I think they're overreacting.
I'm going to jump in next here. Because Brett and I have had this conversation well before we started doing this podcast in many ways, with our own ideas of how comics will be going and should be going. And the idea of this, and Mark Waid is really in doing this, really echoing kind of what where we saw it, not to put ourselves over too much, but kind of where we saw it could and probably should go. I mean, I'm of the feeling that the way the internet is evolving and the way products are distributed and paid for and the way people receive money instead of simply charging for a product, more receiving donations, I think is going to be something that you will see more and more will become the future of the internet, unless some sort of government or international agency changes and puts a structure into the internet. But as a free market, because so much stuff is already free, I think you're fighting a losing battle and you're better off giving a product that people will hopefully enjoy and donate to afterwards. And I think that might be his point of view. I know that's kind of our point of view on this podcast. We want to give you a run, really fun, free podcast. And if later on we find a way that you guys enjoy the show and you want to support us, that would be awesome. You know, and that's kind of his, like, what's different between what he's doing and what we're doing in some ways, you know?
Really not a lot. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it's his choice to release a comic book. It's his choice to write it. It's his choice to find whoever will draw it for nothing. And, hey, good for them. I look forward to getting it. Certainly I can afford it.
It's in Brett's budget. That's all he's saying.
Betcha. Well, this podcast is, the pay is not as good as I might have hoped.
well. That's because we got to pay Chris for all his stuff, you know.
He's the expensive member. You won't even let him talk.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, no.
Because he charges up per word. Go ahead, Chris.
I hate you so much. I really do. No, I was just going to say, whatever Mark Waid has always been sort of ahead of the curve. He sees where we're going. I find if you follow Mark Waid and dial it back 35%, you're really got something there. I mean, CrossGen was great, but you know what? It could have been dialed back 35% and been successful. I don't think he's correct that this endeavor will be correct, but I think something similar that actually incorporates the brick and mortar stores will be successful in 5 years.
Well, you know what? I understand they're scared to death. And I mean, Brett and I used to own a comic book shop. And, you know, hell, we still wish we owned a comic book shop. But the truth is, Blockbuster doesn't exist anymore. And you know why? Because the way media was distributed has changed. But there's still somebody out there making money upon the media the Blockbuster used to make it upon. It's just, it's different. Netflix is now making the money off that. It's different. So it is difficult for stores. I'm not saying that they will always completely go away, but I understand why they're scared to death. But like I say, I mean, things change. It's the natural evolution of things. And this is part of that process. We'll see where it goes.
I mean, the truth
Keith,
of the
you
matter
must
is,
have some,
well,
oh,
sorry,
go ahead, Brad.
The truth of the matter is for me is that I don't ever see the print form going away. I know way too many people who love having the print comic in their collection. But at the same time, those people are also more than willing to grab a digital copy of something that they're maybe less likely to read. You know, absolutely, yeah. I think that comic book stores can still exist, but there needs to be a new model.
There does need to be a new model so that they have a way to distribute these things as well. And why wouldn't they want to? Why wouldn't comic publishers want to partnership with comic book stores who have been good partners to them in the past? This new model. But you say, Brett, that you don't think that this is going away, the brick and mortar and the print publishing. Well, it is going away. It may be 100 years. It may be 10 years, but it is going away. To some degree. I mean, it's just because things are changing. But again, like I say, I mean, there's no more Blockbusters. But that doesn't mean, I don't think that, see, maybe it's because I'm not as dialed into it, but I don't think that I saw the same amount of fear from book publishers towards the Kindle and, books distribution to that level. I don't recall it being the same type of fear. As comic books, Keith, you must have a billion things to say to react here.
I will leap in with when the Kindle Fire was launched and they had 100 DC graphic novels that were exclusive for 3 months. There were stores that stopped carrying those DC graphic novels.
No, I mean, I don't mean that regular book publishers, not just regular novel publishers, the Chapters or Indigos or these things. I don't recall or.
Well, what we're losing.
That industry as a general being as afraid of the digital format as comic book publishers and stores are.
Well, what we're losing
right
now. What we're losing now, though, are the smaller companies on every one of these groups. The smaller bookstores, the smaller record stores went 10 years ago, 5 and 10 years ago. The smaller video stores have died the last 3 years since Netflix came in.
Well, Blockbuster died. They weren't smaller. I mean, the smaller ones, frankly,
Canada closed. Blockbuster in the U.S. is still open.
Okay.
They're in trouble, but they are still open.
They're in trouble. And they're looking to distribute in a similar way to Netflix. Not only that, who was it? VHQ is another one that closed here. That was a major national chain. What were you saying again? Because I had a counterpoint, and I don't remember your point because you cut me off.
I don't know. I never made it through the whole thought because you cut me off. it is as people change how they how they consume this media, and it happens in every different media. You know, it has to change the way that you approach it. It's happening in magazines and newspapers. It happened in music, like I said, 5-10 years ago. The used places died first. All of those used CD places, because the value of a used CD, like the only value is getting it brand new.
Okay, now I remember what your now I remember what my point was, Keith. You said that 3 to 5 years ago the small DVD stores and whatever shut down. No, see, I disagree. See, what happened was 25 years ago, 30 years ago, VHS, there was only the small stores. And then the small stores got put up by the big stores, by the Blockbusters, by the big chains. And the mom-and-pop stores went away. And now those are put up by the new thing. And it is just part of the – and this will be put up by the new thing too. It is just – it already happened. Those same people, the Blockbusters, who are complaining about the Netflix and that type of thing is putting them out of business, were the same people that did it to somebody else. Just like Walmart put the mom-and-pop stores out. And something will, I'm not sure if something will put up Walmart out of business or not. It's hard to imagine, but it's not impossible. Also, we don't know where the future will go. I will say this as well. I mean, I know that the internet shopping and the idea of doing it that way, distribution directly to your home, may someday, when it fully takes off, be the way that a Walmart goes out of business. It's possible. I mean, we don't know. But people at the time complained that Walmart was coming in, putting the mom and pop stores down. And pretty soon they found that they were getting more options at a cheaper price, and people stop complaining.
Well, and that's the two sides of what's going on in comics. We all love our local comic stores. There's absolutely 100% no doubt that we all love our local comic stores. But
a shout out to Alpha Comics. Those guys are awesome. I love going there. You know,
absolutely. I love walking in a store. I could wander around for hours. Brett and I were in a store the other day, and he was getting annoyed with me because I just kept wandering around looking for something because I wanted to give them money. Like, I'm just looking for the thing that I got money, and I'm going to give you to you for something.
Okay, so that's different.
I have a red lantern ring.
I have that same experience. I have that same experience with Chris, except for he doesn't have trouble finding something to give money. He has trouble deciding which of the many things he's giving the money to narrow it down to.
I'm no sure comic go with. Bookstore sure has ever lost with money with me as a file.
No.
I really thought you were going to go with a joke about my mom there, Mo.
I already got one in. This isn't We Talk Wrestling. I'm not going overboard in the mom jokes.
However, there are two sides of it. That, you know, I love bookstores too. But I increasingly, in bookstores, I look around, I pick up a book, I read the back of it, I read the first couple pages, and then in my mind, my math goes, but this is $5 cheaper if I just go home and order it and I'll have it in 3 days. I'm not going to read it in the next 3 days anyway, and I can save $5. And that's, you know, half of another book. And, you know, that's the big challenge in the comic stores, and it's why they've had to diversify into toys and graphic novels and impulse buy stuff. And increasingly that's where the focus is going to be. There's a lot of stores that you see smaller and smaller floppy racks for single issues. And, you know, most of the square footage is put over to statues and toys and collections. And, you know, the graphic novel, but the trade paperback doesn't get replaced by digital. You know, the digital trade isn't the same. The digital trade is a pile of single issues. It doesn't feel like anything.
You know, it's kind of funny because you'll remember when the big bookstores, the Chapters and these places started carrying those graphic novels. There was a fear that when they were carrying those graphic novels that they were going to put out the comic book stores out of business too. And well, it didn't happen.
I remember sitting at a distributors meeting for Styx, which was the distributor in Canada before the whole Heroes World and Diamond thing in the early 90s. And I remember people in that room 20 years ago terrified that Walmart was going to have a comic rack. And Marvel was going to make a deal with Walmart to have a rack of Marvel comics there. And that would be the end for local comic stores. And you know, this is 20 years ago. This is not new in any way. Every time any challenge has come along, and, you know, that never ended up being anything. They have, you know, the same six comics that any other place carries. Three of them are Archie. And you get, like, token Wolverine, token Spider-Man. It just never happened because, as it turns out, people that buy comics like them to buy them at a comic store where they're not going to be, you know, rolled in half because they've been picked up 20 times. And every time one of these challenges comes along, you know, the local stores react the same way. We're doomed! We're doomed! And then they'll, and then, you know, when changes happen, they change their business model because, you know, the ones that survive are good businessmen. And the ones that feel they can't change enough close up, and that's that. And it just is what it is.
All right, Brett, I mean, I think I've weighed in a ton on this, and Keith built it up and then came in and hit it home hard, but good topic. Chris or Brett, any last thoughts from you guys?
No, I think Keith nailed it.
I think that, you know, it would be very interesting because most of the bookstores, especially with the digital, have found a way to kind of try to corner the market by each releasing their own book reader. And it would almost be interesting if Marvel and DC ever decided to try to do competing comic book readers, digital comic book readers. That would be quite an interesting moment.
Excellent. Maybe a local comic store book or a comic book store reader that, tells you where your local comic shops are. You download your comics onto it. But that's the only place to buy it is comic stores.
Yeah, but honestly, like, you know, as a former comic book store owner, I can only imagine. I would love to be able to sell digital comics, be a medium for that, because the truth of the matter is that you don't ever have to have product in your store. It's just like you want it, you buy it. I take some money, I don't have product in my store. I don't have to worry about how much extra copies I have. I always have a copy ready for you. You know, it doesn't matter. It's brilliant.
And you know what? The advantages for all of this for the consumer, I mean, they're numerous, and you can't deny that what's good for the consumer doesn't necessarily have to be what's good for the stores. It sucks for them, but who's more important here, the consumer or the middleman?
Well, we love the middleman, but there's an old phrase that when the car came in, there weren't government bailouts for horse and buggy companies. Sometimes things change, and it's unfortunate that, you know, parts go away. You know, it's unfortunate when when the small DVD stores close, but it changes.
You know, that's a good point. I like that.
I do have one point about that, though, because when you do look at the concept of, you know, some of the places like the bigger places taking over now, in the case of a comic book store, it is very different because there's many people who do love to go to a comic book store because of the atmosphere, because of the chat and stuff like that, whereas in a Blockbuster, the only chat that you're getting is, what was that again?
But Brett has the evolution that we've already seen on the internet with Twitter and finding people of like-minded, interesting, having like-minded, I've had a lot of interesting conversations on Twitter with people I've never met before that replaces that desire to go in and meet and talk with people in a file type format, in a comic book store format. Twitter, to some degree, combine that with this other thing, and maybe that replaces the feeling of the comic book store. I mean, unfortunately, how about that?
And the feeling of air on your face as you refuse to leave the house?
Yes.
That's another positive.
But there are those that are intimidated by comic stores. There are those that don't feel comfortable in comic stores. There is, you know, there's still, as cool as geek is now, there is still that element of going into the comic store, not as cool as, look at this thing I got on my tablet.
And you know what?
It's exactly the same product, but you've gotten it in ways that are, you know, more socially acceptable to some groups.
And, you know, I some comic book stores, they've done it for themselves. While I think that the presentation and the in-store presentation comic book stores over the years has improved, there's no doubt there's been a lot of disgusting places I went into to sell comic books that I love, but absolutely has hurt the image of comic books over the years. And the stores have done it for themselves. And there's been a certain amount of arrogance as well. Some of these places haven't lasted and some have. But that is another point, though. I think that is a good point. Chris, I know I can see it in your face. What are you going to say?
Well, I'm just saying I kind of like the Dungeon comic book store.
How about this, guys? How about the fact that there was never that national chain or national or international chain for comic books that took over? There never was that Walmart, Blockbuster, whatever, Gap. I don't know. But there was never that comic book store. Why was that?
Well, actually, you know, before you finish that, almost it's one of those cases where I think that Mile High Comics has actually come the closest to a chain store that we found. But again, even they've found that the hardest thing to do is to carry on actual storefronts. I know their web business does perfectly well. You know, like they can go in, they can find comic books, they can fill orders of any type of comic for people. But, you know, when you talk about, they used to have stores all over the U.S., you know, in several states. But I mean, now they only have, you know, I think it's even like two or three stores overall. So I think it's just one of those cases where people tried to a certain degree. But I just don't think that the margin is not there on comic books to entice somebody to say, like, ooh, a big giant comic book store where I can make 50 cents an issue. Yes!
It is still an owner-operated model. Really, it's, you know, it's like a used bookstore. You can make enough money to support yourself and break even. But you're not going to make your fortune running a comic store. You know, I talked to a guy that ran a used bookstore, and he said it's a great way to not make any money. You don't lose anything, but you don't make anything either.
Comic book stores are relationships. That's how I know you guys. And if a comic, if I even got the hint of that, you know, I'm not going to get this book this week because he's giving it to somebody else, I'd switch stores.
You know, I do think that is why. I mean, I was curious as your theories, everybody's theories as to why, and I think that everybody's made good points there. But I think, Chris, you're right. The difference between a Blockbuster is they can go in. They don't need to talk to the guys about the comic book stores. If you're going to do a chain, a Blockbuster form of comic book stores, you need to be able to get a bunch of people that you know are just the right employees to make sure those people come back and they feel comfortable, because comic book people love to talk to other comic book people. And I think that's the difficulty why you haven't seen – I think you can – even in something like Electronic Boutique, you know, EB Games, people would love the idea that people would love the idea that they could just sit there and talk video games to people, and to some degree they can, but some of those employees actually don't play video games, and you know what? It doesn't matter. It's not the same format. The comic book shop is unique, and that's why I don't want to see it go away, but things change, and you know, you're fighting an oncoming tidal wave to some degree. So it's just a matter of accepting the change, working with it, and finding a new way to make the comic book model, the middleman, stay alive while still having what's best for the consumer and the publisher as well. It's interesting. It'll be an interesting time.
Now, yeah, because I remember when we were all shopping at the same store, if I went in and the owner wasn't there and it was the employee, let's call him Chico. I don't remember his real name.
I know who you're talking about. His name was Chico.
Yeah.
Good reason to
call
him.
Was that his real name? I thought we'd just call him Chico. But I wouldn't give him orders. I'd hang out and listen to what he had to say. But I'd make a note of everything I had to actually get for like the next couple months. It's like, okay, well, I have to come back next week when the owner's here, so I make sure my file is needs to be.
And you know what? Yeah, there was a trust of him getting your comic books right. But also, you know what? I remember one time when I was getting books from somebody who was and I found out that he didn't read many comic books, that he owned a store and only read a couple. I was so disappointed. I didn't want to continue to be his customer. I wanted to buy from somebody like me.
And I know for a fact that Brett has made decisions on comic book stores. I remember when we were shopping for a comic book store, and we went into one, and the guy started to recommend that we go home and watch Space Above and Beyond, and neither of us really liked the show. I think that was the show. And we wouldn't go back to the store ever again.
Well, we were whiny little bitches when we were young, and as opposed to now, we're whiny big bitches because we're older and fatter. Let's get into the actual comic book itself here. Unless, Brett, you had something to say?
Well, I just wanted to say, though, that just to kind of end that off, is that when I am in a comic book store, you just have a certain feeling about the people behind, because there is two types of people. There's employees, and there's the people who want to be there. And I think that when you're dealing, I only want to go into a comic book store that has people who want to be there. Because when you're just talking about an employee, it's just like, yeah, they'll ring you through and they'll hand you your comic books. But you're not going to get that same impact, that emotional impact, as you do with somebody who wants to be there.
All right, let's actually get into the actual book here. So why don't you go ahead, Keith? You know what? You're the man on this.
Well, Mark Waid has released a PDF of a story called Luther. It's a short story. This is his proof of concept, he calls it, that his idea of digital comics works. And I'd seen this a little while back. I gave it another read this week and had the guys look at it as well. It's a very simple zombie story. He's already said that if this were packaged as a physical comic, it's been designed, what they call landscape. So wider than it is tall for tablets. So you're using using the space a different way. You're paying attention to the tablets and widescreen type screens are what you're looking at, as opposed to an up and down comic book, which is taller than it is wide, as you may have noticed. And so he said if this were printed, though, it's a simple matter of taking that wide thing and putting and stacking them one on top of the other, and then you have a traditional comic shape. You don't change the shape of the comic to fit the thing. You change the shape of the thing to fit the medium, which is his argument for having it this way to begin with. And the interesting part of it is, in even a simple PDF, you tab through or page through, and as well as going panel to panel, the way, you know, guided view looks in Comixology, there's also text boxes, narration, some elements of things appearing, but not a motion comic. It's not the same as motion comics, which we're going to talk about in a minute. Just with things popping that are, you know, some surprises and things that show up. So it's a neat story. I think he could have, I will say, best foot forward. He could have left out the R word that he throws in near the end. It's a neat concept. To me, it still doesn't feel quite like a comic. Like, it's trying too hard to be not a comic. I really like the idea that he has, though, of right now we're only laying out comics for a physical page. They should be laid out for a tablet. If tablet is where you want them read.
Why do you think he should have left out the R word?
It's unnecessary, and it's a proof of concept thing. He wants as many people to read this as possible and have a good feeling about it.
But I didn't have an issue with it, though I normally would have, because I felt that it was organic to the character and the story and the situations. And in a way, the character who uses this derogatory term towards the end, kind of admits that perhaps he was wrong in his evolution or his viewpoints on who should be considered that. You know,
yeah, and I think
it has a moral to it in some ways. That's why I don't think it was
context
bad.
In the context of the story, I think I agree. But when the whole point of this, of producing this story, was to have as many people as possible read it, it would have been the same as putting in, you know, F-bombs all over the place. You're limiting your audience and you're giving your, you know it's going to be a buzzword. So, you know, if this was in the second story, I wouldn't have had any reaction, but it was like, I don't want to actually show this to a lot of people to see what they think of it.
But like I say, it's like this character learns something about who this person who he views as lesser. He learns a lesson. There's a moral to it. You know, I mean, F-bombs just for the sake of F-bombs, and too many comic books are doing this, is, I don't know.
This
would get off on a whole other subject.
Yeah, let's stay away from a review of the comic itself. I'm more interested in the review of the format and the interface.
I do understand your point of view. I just say that it was organic, so therefore, to me, it wasn't it's organic, so therefore, it wasn't what's the word I'm looking for? Exploitive. So, personally, but, all right, let's, as far as the books, you know, it's one of the things that I've always found, rather remarkable is just how well books have translated to digital format and to, reading on my tablet or on my laptop. That's one of the things that I was most concerned about. I know it was something that Chris was concerned about. And it's one of the things that, but the idea is, if you'll go back and you'll remember me talking to Kerry Nord and artists like this, one of the things that I would ask them is, are you trying to present the books differently, knowing that digital books and that medium is coming? And are you trying to present the layouts differently? And they weren't thinking about it at the time, is what they're saying. So I think it's very interesting. This is just another step towards the evolution of digital books, and that's interesting. That's my opinion on it. Chris, what do you think?
As far as this book, I didn't really love the modifications they made. I found it very confusing, actually. The repeat panels I didn't like. I do think with practice, a lot of creators will be able to get this, get a form that works better for digital, but out of the gate, I thought this was a little sloppy. Although I love the story.
Yeah. But it's an experiment. It's an experiment. I like the story too. It's an experiment, and they're trying to do something and get better. You know, steps.
I'm also just wondering if it was because of how we read it. Like, is PDF truly the ultimate way to read this book?
No, I don't think it is. I think that's a good point.
I think my problem with a lot of the digital first stuff, the made for digital, and it's actually my problem with when we talked about guided view. Now Comixology, with tablets, they don't have to do guided view anymore, but there are people that love it, and that's great. To me, guided view and particularly what Chris pointed out here with what Wade has done in this book, Wade and his artist, is that by having the panel stay static and things come into it, you are forcing me to read the comic at the pace that you want me to. As opposed to that being an organic thing, the way that artist, artists like Kirby or Jim Lee makes a big panel for you to focus on for a bit, and then a bunch of small panels that you know you're supposed to speed up because you know the action's speeding up. But I'm still the one that decides how fast I read that. With guided view and with what is in this Wade book, he's telling me the pace that I'm supposed to be reading this. And at that point, it's not quite a comic book to me. That is fundamental to me in the way a comic book works, is that's animation at that point. And it's just really, really shitty animation.
Well, but isn't it, when you say that, I mean, it really is. You know what? That's an interesting point of view. I mean, are we supposed to be getting the artist's interpretation and pace of the story or our own? You know, I mean, what's the right thing to do? I mean, an argument can be made for both sides.
I know with comic books, I like my peripheral vision when I turn a page. You know, you always have that second that when you look over at the wrong page a little bit and, oh, this is going to get good, but I have to start over here.
That's why he's our Ringo right there.
I love that joy of comics. And I love getting mad because I accidentally saw something on that second page. And I know I go,
yeah, that's exactly.
Yeah.
What do you mean he took off his mask? What happened?
It definitely makes it easier for the artist, though, because there's a lot of copied panels, you know, just to go over where it's just like you add a little bit to it.
Yeah, I have to wonder if that's going to be... as again, it's an experimentation, it's a learning process, it's an early step, and people will continue to, I mean, comic books, the visual telling of comic books is always evolving and getting better, and, you know, I mean, the books we'll review this week, we saw some fan art, you know, I mean, that you wouldn't have seen even 20 years ago, you know, so whatever. I tell you this, I ain't stopping reading comic books anytime soon. It's too exciting right now. Let's move on to another topic here. A next step within the same topic, Keith.
Well, we did take a look at some motion comics this past week. Now, these have been out for a while. Marvel does quite a few of them. Buffy comics have been done in them, and you can buy them at, you know, HMV. You can buy them through a lot of bookstores, etc. They're kind of the comic book equivalent of books on tape. It's a really great analogy.
Actually, I was thinking about that. That's interesting.
But they're an interesting animal, and I know that amongst us there are different opinions on them. I know that what DC did with Watchmen really put me off them. And it was much more in-depth. It was much closer to what they do with the Buffy one, with on-screen narration panels that are also read out loud. You know, it's like subtitles for a language I speak. I don't need that. The Iron Man one that we looked at, Iron Man Extremis, didn't have that, which was nice. I still find motion comics, I don't find them comics plus, I find them animation minus.
Is this because you're not a fan of Neil Adams?
Yes. Yes, I know that Neil Adams, when he interviewed him, took credit for inventing digital comics.
Not quite.
And God bless him.
Well, I mean, Continuity Studios does a lot of motion comics, and you know, who's ever fault it was. But you know,
Brett,
like,
it's true that this is something we did talk to Neil Adams about. Now, we had an interview with Neil Adams, along with Mike Mignola, Adrian Barbeau, Alan Burnett, a bunch of other people, Aaron Gray. So, you know what, I just want to say, Brett has just recently added to our website. We talk podcasts and interviews section where you can hear just the interviews and the clips, and definitely listen to some of these. They're awesome. Brett, go ahead.
But, you know, it's just, I just question, is it because you don't like Neil Adams that you do it, that you say these things?
I've loved looking at Odyssey and looking at the little tiny art that's around his word balloons. It's beautiful stuff.
Oh, come on. This is where you say that you don't hate Neil Adams. You just disagree with some of his points.
Yes.
Yes.
I am quite fond of Neil Adams, actually. I like Neil Adams.
There you go. And it was a hell of an interview, wasn't it?
It was a good interview.
Yeah. I wrote the questions. Fred asked the questions. It's all good. okay, let's...
I will not fault a single thing on Neil Adams' comics, except that Batman Odyssey is really overwritten.
Genius.
His art is genius.
Okay, let's move on to this a little bit further, though, because...
Didn't we finish on the last topic?
No, we didn't. Really, let's move on to this a little bit. Let's look this motion comics a little bit further. I'm not really aware of how the technology for this is created. So does anybody kind of understand it a little bit better and can explain it at all? Does anybody have a knowledge?
I will say that one of the things that bugs me about motion comics, and you know, it reminds me of the 1960s or 70s Mary Marvel Marching Society cartoons, where they literally cut out comic book figures and move them across an animation, their animation field. So there was very little motion to the cartoons. It was really just, you know, sound effects and narration, audio narration, and then moving literally cut out of the comic book figures, as their animation figures.
But and that's a great way to see a movie.
That's right. They were, but that's what it reminds me of. It's flashier than that. There's better backgrounds, but a lot of times it still looks like, you know, cutouts from the comic that are moved across the screen.
Yeah, absolutely. To me, as I'm watching these, they're not comic books. You can call them digital comics if you want, or motion comics, or whatever you want, all you want. They are animated films. I'm sorry. That's what it is. It's an animated film, so it's a matter of whether or not you like the quality. Now, I want you to compare, because you mentioned that there is a difference between the two, but I want you to, Keith, compare the, go in a little bit more into depth on the presentation of the differences between the Iron Man Extremis and and the Buffy season one or season 8 episode 1, I guess it would have been. So go in a little bit more and explain that a little better.
I think Chris is trying to get our attention.
No, I just wanted to say I actually jumped on the motion comics bandwagon before continuity jumped on. I remember a company called Eagle One, and they produced some motion comics based off the mostly the Ultimate Universe, as well as the Bruce Jones run on the Incredible Hulk, and they used a whole lot more of the true cutout panel rather than to try to create motion out of static images. And I have to say, just adding sound to a comic book and pacing the panels as they show worked much better for me than to actually have this limited form of animation. Now, yeah. I do enjoy these this current run of Marvel motion comics, but they're not comic books, and it's a completely different experience.
Now, you know what, Chris? I remember when I actually went into an electronic boutique or EB Games or whatever you call it to buy an Xbox game. Yeah, I remember I went in there to buy an Xbox game, and that's where you discovered those. You were in Calgary. I'm going back to my place and watching some of those with you, and we both thought they were an interesting experiment at the time. That was cool, and we didn't go through all of them. I know you enjoyed them when you got home. But yeah, Keith, let's go back. Explain the differences in presentation between Iron Man Extremis and Buffy Season 8, Episode 1, please.
Well, I'd say the Iron Man Extremis is a much smoother animation style. Definitely looks more animation than comic. It has still a bit of staticness. You know, figures don't move freely. They kind of move in small movements as, you know, narration and track goes over it, dialogue. The Buffy, however, is closer to what I was describing, the old Marvel cartoons, where, you know, it's cut out from the comic book arts, going across static backgrounds, you know, figures in a pose, and then they move, jumping and leaping and etc. A lot of disembodied voices. They do give voices to all the characters. Strangely, the Buffy, though, as I said, has narration boxes that appear on screen, but they're also red, which, you know, it happened in the Watchmen motion comic as well.
It's a personal pet peeve for you, obviously. It doesn't bother me at all.
Really bothers me a lot. I'm used to watching subtitled films, and I'm reading it, and someone's talking. It's like I'm in the theater, and someone's reading the subtitles out loud near me, which also bugs me.
Yeah, see, it didn't bother me at all. But so you prefer the Iron Man Extremis?
I actually didn't like either one of them, but if I, you know, gun to my head, Iron Man Extremis. Yeah, just because the animation style was better. I mean, it was closer to. I'm calling them both animation. One's just lousy animation, and one's better animation. But they're, to me, they're both, neither one is, I don't think motion comic is a real meaningful term.
Okay.
To me, they're both just animation.
Preference, Brent? On either one of those two?
I mean, the truth of the matter is that I just like motion comics, period. It's almost that I've never met a motion comic that I don't like. I'm happy to call them motion comics because they are a hybrid of comics and animation. You know, it's just a matter of how deep you feel that they're getting on the anime. Probably, I like the fact that sometimes they're willing to take some chances with the different technologies and explore and experiment with that. So, you know, it's kind of neat to see what they're going to come up with. I love the Watchmen motion comic. I think it's really just, you know, almost as good as reading the book.
Chris, your thoughts?
I find these motion comic books very hit or miss. Some I like. The Iron Man Extremist I did like. But then Thor Loki, which is Marvel's most recent motion comic, I believe, which was done in a very similar style, I didn't think suited the comic book at all. I really can't see this working too much far into the future because it's melding way too many mediums to actually work. I am familiar with the Watchmen style. I like it, but I didn't like the Watchmen, but I've liked other things done in that similar style. There's too much going on. You're never going to get that perfect medium where it's going to work on a consistent basis.
Interesting. You know what? And here I was. I didn't like the Iron Man one, though I finished it. Went, I probably enjoy reading this comic book series, but boy, was this ever slow. And everything is a close-up and full panel in motion. So nothing as interesting is happening except for the idea that it highlighted to me it was poor animation. Whereas I thought the Buffy one, and maybe it is, I watched them both at like 2 and 2:30 in the morning. On my tablet, which is a 7-inch screen, about 4 inches from my face, with the lights off. And the Buffy one was far more interesting to me. It had 3D motion in and out. It felt like it was 3D, even without the glasses coming at me. The way the panels moved in and out, and popped in and out. The voice acting was better as well. But just the special effects, you would have lightning come underneath, highlight the panel, and then disappear. I thought it was a really neat animation movie, just not a comic book in any way. But that was the one I absolutely preferred. But again, it's interesting and it's not going to go away and it is going to get better and more interesting. And the question is, will people support it? And, I mean, that's still up in the air. So, let's move on to our Wii Views. Brett, why don't you open?
Well, why don't I start out with, one of our, maybe not our biggest book of the week, but one of our, more closer to home books of the week. With Riley Rossmo's Rebel Blood. It's a zombie story that has almost no story. There's a lot of stuff going on, and it looks kind of neat. There's a lot of blood. There's a lot of wolf-type creatures. There's a lot of seeming flashbacks. And in all fairness, I have absolutely no idea what happened in the comic book at all. It actually reached a point where I stopped trying to figure out what was going on in the comic and just finished reading it. That's not to say that I don't like the book. What it is to say is that I'm really glad it's a miniseries because I would read it just to try to find out if I am ever going to figure out the story. I'm not 100% sure that I will, but I am interested in trying to figure out if I will. So I'm not sure I can actually say, you should buy this and read it, but I probably will.
That's a backhanded compliment.
I do like the art. Like it's really cool looking.
Chris, what do you think?
It reminded me a lot of 30 Days of Night by Steve Niles, where the art was iconic. Reminded me of Bill Sedgwick. A lot of images stuck with me.
Hold on, Brett, how do you pronounce that name? Hold on. Brett, how do you pronounce the name?
I think it actually, I guess it's
Sienkiewicz?
Sienkiewicz, yeah.
Okay. Reminded me of Bill Sienkiewicz. Just gorgeous. Looks great on a poster. In the case of Steve Niles, it was strong enough to get a rather crappy movie. And I'm not falling for this again. The story just wasn't strong enough for me. Interesting, but not interesting enough to continue for me.
Keith, what do you think?
I really couldn't follow the story. Again, I did like the art. I see where Chris is going with his comparisons. I read the story and then I went back and gave it a second try to read it and hoping I would understand more of what was going on. The jumping around, the, you know, are they dream sequences? Is he losing his mind? Is it memories? Is it a mix of those?
It could have been a movie set. There's one point where I looked and I thought I saw like a boom mic in it. So
yes, but I think it was a movie set in a dream. that was
yeah.
One
that
of the
confused
dreams.
The hell out of me. I had to look at that panel like 10 times.
I think that was a dream that what was happening had turned out to be a movie, but it's really going on. It's pretty meta. Is my Thwipping Boys drop. It's meta. It's very meta. So I don't know. I had a lot of trouble following it. And then I flipped to the back page and there's a quote from someone and it mentions that it's a zombie book. And I'm like, well, now I'm going to read it again and think, okay, it's a zombie book. Does it make any more sense? The third one didn't help. so it's pretty.
It's very pretty, and you know what? If it wasn't four issues, then I would probably be just flat out like, no, I'm not touching this one again. But because it's four issues, I'm like, maybe this is just me, you know, trying to inflict pain upon myself. But
and I think it's a closed four issues too. I think it is a closed four issues that it's a complete story for you. So I don't know. I don't know if I recommend it or not. It's a difficult one. Maybe I'll recommend the trade later. See if it wraps.
Yeah, you know
what?
Oh man. I mean, I think Riley has Rosmero. Is Rosmo? Rosmo.
Rosmo.
Yeah, I think he has so much talent. I mean, this is one amazing book to look at. I loved his work on Green Wake, and this looks even better. And Green Wake, it could have been very difficult to follow, but somehow they managed to keep it coherent. This is not that. this is a mess, and it's too bad because the art is so good and because he has so much talent. And I'm not sure this time Riley Rosmero, I believe he co-plotted this and with I think it's Alec Link or Adam Link. I believe it's Alec Link who co-plotted with him and did the script and I'm not sure if it's his influence or whatever, but there's books that I read out there where I go, they're trying to confuse me and not give me everything. And then there's books out there where I went, they confuse me because they're still learning the medium. And that's what I had to feel in this. Cause there's too many times where there's different characters who look similar to other characters. And I don't know what's going on. You got to give me some context. You can't just put it out there. There's got to be some context, and there's not enough explanation or dialogue that explains, and there's too many things jumping around. This was a mess. It's really unfortunate because, you know, talented guys. I'm sure Alec Link also is a talented guy, but no. It's a shame. I'm going to move on to a book that I love, though, Super Crooks. Lenel Yu and Mark Miller. I can't help but when I read a Mark Miller book nowadays after Kick-Ass go, man, he's trying to create another movie for Hollywood. He's trying to create another movie they're going to make a movie out of. And I do think there was something with that. But I think this is a really, really good book and really, really just fun, well-paced, good dialogue, interesting concept of, hey, basically, why am I continually being put in jail because I'm trying to commit crimes where there's all these superheroes when there's lots of cities in the world where there's no superheroes, you morons. Can't believe it took this many years for somebody to come up with this. This is going to be, I think, a really, really fun series. And, this was a lot of fun. Keith, what do you think?
Well, it was interesting that, you know, the new comics we got, I picked up this week and, I had to read the stuff that we were going to review for this week. And I had to actually stop reading Kick-Ass 2, which is just finished, so that I could read Supercross. And it was odd going from one to the other of that. I liked it, but I didn't love it. It wasn't Kick-Ass good to me. But it's an interesting concept. I'll be interested once it's got a couple of issues in of where it goes. It didn't wow me, but, intriguing and some interesting character development in the first issue.
The art's really nice too. Leno Yu, I've always thought he was a very talented artist, and I thought that this was, I really liked that this book that he, he's well suited to this book.
It was a good book, not a phenomenal book. I've read better, books by Miller. Is it as strong as Kick-Ass? Probably not. Is it better than Wanted? Probably. Definitely keeping up on this book. I kind of wish Miller would commit to a regular series rather than creating movie properties, but I'm staying on the book.
Oh. I really liked Lionel Yu's art. I thought that it fit the style of the book really well. As far as the rest of the book, I didn't like it. I just thought that, Miller's writing style doesn't work for me. And I just find that I have a healthy dislike of the vast majority of the characters. And really, at the end of the day, it was just, for me, it was just like, wow, I don't like you. I actually want you to go back to prison, and I want the book to end.
He was in prison?
I think so. But it was just one of those cases.
Well, seriously, he was in prison?
That time lapse was a rather awkward transition in the book, wasn't it?
But, I mean, those issues, you know, notwithstanding of some of the you know, pacing. But, you know,
I mean, said it's 5 years later, Chris. What more do you need?
But it started out and I thought it was kind of fun. And then once I really settled in with the story, it was just like, wow, you know, this almost feels to me like, you know, it's like, what if Scam really sucked?
Oh, it takes place in Las Vegas too, as well, isn't it? There, portion of the story.
Yeah, they just had that moment, and it was just that point where I'm like, yeah, you know, I just don't. For me, I'm sure I know that there's going to be a ton of people out there who really dig the book, but not my thing.
No, it's not as good a Scam, I'll say that. But I did really like it. You know, it's interesting though, Brett. You said something that they're really like Miller, even when I'm liking his book. I know he's clever, and he knows he's clever. He comes across, his style does come across like he's a very arrogant guy when you're reading his books. Even if I'm enjoying it, he just feels, I don't know if it's true or not, but his style certainly feels that way to me.
I mean, I stopped reading, like, I grew bored of reading Kick-Ass. You know, you can point out almost all of his work, and at some point I've tried everything, and I've just gone like, yeah, whatever, I'm not there.
All right, go on to another book then, Brett.
Oh, dandy. Let's go with Rocketeer Adventures 2. The first story I thought by Guggenheim was pretty good. The second story, the Ducketeer, I thought was awesome. I thought it was very funny. And absolutely the Stan Sakai story at the end just totally blew me away. It's just one of those cases where I would just grab that out and want just that piece of the story too. But, you know, the Rocketeer character is really neat, and I'm glad to see it coming back. And honestly, with these, if they stick with this quality of story throughout, then I would totally be up for this book.
Chris?
Actually, I'd like to hear what Keith has to say on this one.
Okay.
Before I,
Keith!
Well, the Guggenheim story, I enjoyed. It's quite simple. It is, it's an 8-page story that feels like an 8-page story. You didn't go to any great, you didn't crack any, great myths or anything with, you know, the story. It's a neat introduction to a couple, if they throw in a couple of characters, you get to know this, like, townspeople in, you know, an 8-page story type of way, and it's kind of a fun way to show how the Rocketeer is seen by the average person, which is kind of the theme of the, of all of the stories in the book. The Sienkiewicz story I thought looked really nice. I actually didn't like it. And I think it was that they used so much dialogue from the original Duck Dodgers that the conceit of it just wore on me. That I felt like it didn't have anything new to say. Like once it, you know, really, it could have, what it did in 8 pages, it could have done in 2 pages because it was only one gag. You know, the gag was it's Duck Dodgers but it's the Rocketeer, so it's the Ducketeer. That's a 1 or 2 page gag. That's not an 8-page gag. It looks, again, looks pretty. You know, what I was saying about Rub of Blood, it looks very pretty. You know, Sienkiewicz is an amazing artist. The Stan Sakai story, you know, when Brett and I were at the comic store, I pointed to this book and I said, there's a Stan Sakai story in this book that's one of the best short stories I've ever read. And, it is a wonderful, wonderful story. And I don't want to describe anything of it because it's 8 pages. You can give away, the whole thing.
You give away a lot fast. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but it's just a wonderful story and it's worth the price of admission alone.
You know what? It's funny because this was interesting for me. We'll get to you last now, Chris, but, it's interesting for me because this just built. I was like, I liked it. I loved it. Like as far as the three storylines and I wrap this thing up and I go, that's as much fun as I've had. Just pure fun as I've had reading a comic book just felt like a pure old fashioned comic book that took me back to the feeling of reading comic books when I was a kid. What a great book. I really thought, and you know what? I look at the upcoming people working on it. They have really talented, interesting creators coming up on this, and it's an interesting character that hasn't been fully explored, and a very underrated movie, I'll say as well, that hopefully this will give it a little push as well into the future, because I don't even think that came out on DVD. Like,
It's out on DVD and it just released on Blu-ray recently.
Okay, thank God. Thank God, because I think it's a really underrated film that did an excellent job of being true to the property. So maybe it'll get a fanboy film review someday down the road. But, so much fun. This was also a terrific book. Chris, what'd you think?
Yeah, the Rocketeer. I didn't love any of the stories. I did like every last one of them. And I love the book because, you know, they gave you with the first story, with the Guggenheim story, they gave you the iconic Betty Page, story, traditional story of the Rocketeer. Then they mixed it up and then they gave the third one was definitely true to the spirit of the Rocketeer. I think on a whole, if they continue to mix it up like that, if we get a single issue like the Ducketeer, I'm going to lose patience with this book really quickly. I like the you know, the few pages, but if they try to expand on any of this, it's going to be a problem for me. Definitely buy it. I enjoyed it greatly on a whole. I found the Ducketeer did make me kind of want to put it down and go find some Animal Man, Wile E. Coyote stuff right away. Something a little bit deeper. But yeah, no, it was a good comic book, but not a great comic book for me.
All right, Chris, then you get to start since you ended. You get to open up the next one.
Next one, the backup feature in Shazam. I don't like
backup
the new look.
Backup feature in JLA.
The Shazam.
I'm gonna correct you. It's a backup feature in Justice League. There's no way.
There you go. The backup feature in Justice
the
League.
The Shazam story in the back of otherwise remarkable book. Yeah. I don't like the look of the new Shazam. I didn't quite understand why his arch nemesis, Dr. Silva, I believe his name is.
Savannah.
All of a sudden went all Lex Luthor on his ass.
Oh, you bastard stole my line.
Neither one of you breaking ground there. That doesn't
no.
have 30 seconds on Twitter.
Yeah, I actually like a more innocent Shazam Captain Marvel character personally. I've never felt he fit in really well in the DC universe. And to tell you the truth, this was sort of feeling to me like almost a Wildstorm thing going on, or maybe Image back in the day with what they did with some of their Superman-esque characters. It just felt too new. To me, Shazam or Captain Marvel should be a more innocent character. I don't know where Captain Marvel fits in this new universe, and I'm not sure he ever really truly fit in the old universe. So I have to fail this backup feature. I don't like the direction it's heading.
You know what, Chris? I think you said this right in one way. I'm not sure if he fit in the old universe. That's probably the biggest issue he's had, was trying to fit him into the DC universe, and he's never quite been there. I think that's one of the biggest issues. But nevertheless, that doesn't absolve, and they're trying to integrate him more in there. That doesn't absolve this absolute piece of shit that was this story. This is my all-time favorite character. And, you know, some people, it's like people love Star Wars and they watch Star Wars, they watch The Phantom Menace and they hated it because it wasn't anything like Star Wars. That's what I felt like. I have my Billy Batson has so many great Shazam stories and a great take, like the Jeff Smith that's so true to what the character and the spirit of it is. And then instead you get this, none of the things that I love about the character, everything's gone. They took away everything that was that character to try and create something more, I suppose, mainstream or palatable. Instead, what you did was pissed on the legacy and the love of a character for me. And it's not even good. If you difference if it was really, really good, it's not. I mean, my God, thank you for making Billy Batson one of the kid. It's funny, you know, I know Holy Moly and the Big Red Cheese, and I know that they want to obviously get away from that because it is cheesy. But you know what? By making him a little asshole, thanks. But I'm not going to be reading this. Jeff Johns, you suck. I hate your guts.
Well, I mean, the fact of the matter is that when I first started the book, I was confused by what was going on, and I thought this seems to be going in an odd direction, and then I figured out what was going on, and I thought, oh, this isn't too bad. Maybe this could go someplace. And then it really hit rock bottom after that point once they did introduce Billy Batson. And from everything from that point on, I just pretty much hated, and you're absolutely right, I want the old Billy Batson back.
I want to read Power of Shazam again. You know what? Keith, what would you have thought if they had turned Booster Gold into something you absolutely hated? Go ahead, your review.
I thought you We're about to say, what if they turn Booster Gold into a jerk?
I wouldn't have said that.
What happens when they turn him nice?
With Booster. They would never go that far off character with Booster.
What if they did turn him into somebody who was nice?
I suffered.
You know, whatever. What if they just...
I'd suffer through extreme justice with Boosters. This too shall pass, Mo. I really like this story, actually. But I don't have the affection for Captain Marvel that I know a couple of my co-hosts do. So I don't carry the baggage of that. I really liked Orgway's graphic novel, but I didn't like the main series that he did, and actually never read the Jeff Smith one.
You gotta read it.
Okay, I'll stop right now and read it. It's in the pile right under Swamp Thing.
it's a little shorter than Swamp Thing. And you know what? You also should read First Thunder, storyline where that they introduced about the same time where they had a first meeting of Superman and
I have read that. Yeah. So I did like this. I will say though, echoing stuff that Mo said in his less favorable review, I'm trying to imagine the story meeting where they were deciding what changes they wanted to make to characters when they reintroduced them in this new DC universe. And late in the night, the answer must have always just become, well, if we thought of making him a jerk, because this is about the 10th character now that's been reintroduced, that's just not a good person. Like, that's your big twist, is that they're kind of annoying. It's where Johns went with Hal Jordan. It's where it's how he writes Batman in that book. It's how he writes every character in the Justice League book. They're just not nice people. They're not anyone that I admire in any way. They're just jerks with power rings. And that's a bit where they went with Billy here. Billy's such a sweet character. Let's reinvent him. Well, okay, come up with a brilliant idea for how it could be a new twist. Well, he's a jerk now. Other than that, I did like the story, and there were elements I really liked and we're only getting teased his origin. Basically, we've got a 10-page story and then 2 pages that are essentially.
I can see enough of his origin of the tease, though, is that they've changed some significant things again. Some significant, iconic, classic things have changed again as far as the retelling of his origin will be coming. And that's another thing that'll piss me off. I can see that's coming. And,
Ordway did a lot of that though, and you like that stuff. I mean, Ordway was.
No, Ordway didn't. The Ordway actually took what other people had changed and added to it, but the changes weren't made by Ordway. They were actually made earlier, and the changes as far as the origin, earlier when he was integrated originally into the DC universe. And Ordway just gave it a fresh gloss of paint. But hey, I only know more about him than you, so don't question me on this.
I withdraw from the field, Mo.
I wonder what Alan Moore thinks of it.
I would love to see Alan Moore write Captain Marvel or Shazam. Billy Batson. I think he'd do an awesome job.
Shazam would be part of he would be part of the yellow, the lightning force.
All right, well then, guys, why don't we just do our final plugs here and then we'll get the hell out of here. Brett, go ahead.
All right. Well, I am Brett at WeTalkPodcast.com. Brett_WeTalk. That's BRETT, 2 T's. Of course, don't forget that I'm joining Keith on Comicosity, writing some comic book reviews, since I seem to like comic books, I guess. And the other thing that I wanted to mention, which I'm just so very excited about, is I took the time and read Understanding Comics over the last week, just nice. Because I didn't want to be the only guy left out there.
And what do you think?
I thought it was a very good book.
It's brilliant.
I can see why people appreciate it.
All right. Chris, what do you got?
I'm Chris at WeTalkPodcast.com or Chris_WeTalk on Twitter. Check out my blog where I try to pathetically defend Red State.
Is that it?
That's it.
All right.
That's all I got going on.
All right, cool. Let's go over to you, Keith.
Well, I am Keith at WeTalk. WeTalkPodcast.com if you want to drop an email. And I am writing reviews for Comicosity right now. My reviews this week, Justice League number 7. I review both stories. Two very, very different reviews there. Rocketeer Adventures 2 and No Place Like Home number 2. And last week I reviewed Saucer Country number 1. So having some fun writing those reviews. And there in our what we haven't watched, what we haven't read last week, I did miss that I haven't ever seen Red State. So when I have read Chris's blog, though, giving his rebuttal to the other guys.
You know what? You'll have to watch it now and settle it. I will be in short order doing a, like I say, a counterpoint to Chris's blog. But really, you should go to WeTalk Podcast. Look up, hopefully that's where you're getting this right now. Up the top corner, you'll see the WeTalk Comics blogs. And there's both Keith's excellent blogs in the Marvel New Universe, as well as Chris's it's a terrific write that Chris did, even if his point of view is wrong. But it's a terrifically written piece that he did, and a lot of fun and great presentation. So I will be doing a counterpoint that will be nowhere near as good.
I apologize to Keith. I didn't mean to lump him in there. I actually thought he was just silently nodding every time you or Brett, the sheer volume of the discontent with Red State, I had thought he had just drowned in that negativity.
The two of them actually hated enough for three people. The two of them hated enough for three
people.
That's true.
Well, okay, but in his defense, when he does see it, he will hate it. Because it sucks.
You know, if you want me to hate something more, then we could just talk about the Wonder Woman pilot.
It's not that bad.
Oh,
Red State is not that bad.
Okay, Red State. Yeah, it is. But like I say, we'll get into that in my blog. So, of course, as I mentioned, we have that. We talk comics or we talk podcast. Sorry, has the interview section now. We have our blogs. We talk wrestling. So popular, you go over to Podomatic, you type in Podomatic, first thing that comes up is Podomatic's homepage, second thing that comes up is a Facebook, third thing that comes up is We Talk Wrestling. It is the number one show on Podomatic, 15,000 shows, it's number one, it's that damn good. Even if you're not a fan, you'll bet you enjoy this, because even if you stop watching wrestling, this is a lot of fun. It's certainly a little more X-rated than this show, but go check out our best of. There's two parts or one six-part thing. Yeah, we love ourselves that much that we had to take six parts. So do that. Of course, shout-outs to Alpha Comics. Visit their website. Find them on Facebook or Twitter. Shout-out to Comicosity. I really enjoy what they do over there. I'm glad you guys are writing for them. Shout out to I Want Wrestling PW Journal. I'm going to give them a shout out to those boys. Shout out to the Thwipping Boys. There's another excellent comic book podcast. So shout outs to some people. And Chris, I just want to say, well, I called you Ringo, and you mentioned what, Thomas the Tank Engine, was it? What was he mentioned?
I believe it was Thomas the Tank.
Yeah, well, George Carlin was the best ever, and he also, Tomic the Tank Engine, so, not that big an insult. Revolution, the cover version of the song, by Stone Temple Pilots from the, Come Together, A Night for John Lennon's Words of Music. It's, a television special that was a tribute to the victims of the September 11 attacks on the World Trade Center. So we think that's an excellent way to go out, and hopefully everybody had fun, and, come visit us, email us. So you can find me, that's Mo, WeTalkPodcast.com or Mo_WeTalk, M-O, no E on my name, and we're OUT.
free your mind.